Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN AM for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. And our top story today, college athletes are using their nil money for investment opportunities. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Chris Smith is a journalist at the Sports Business Journal. Chris, it is great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Of course. Yeah, thank you for having me.
This is, another fun conversation, I guess, fun from the outside looking in. Let's start with a baseline here. And I think we need to establish for myself and the audience exactly what a nil is, because they're relatively newer to the college arena.
Correct. Yes. When you see that acronym, right? NIL, nil, it stands for name, image, and likeness. And essentially, this comes from a few years ago where, you know, for obviously decades and decades, college athletes could not generate income from their athletic careers. They cannot receive a salary. They cannot take endorsements. They cannot get paid by boosters. That finally changed, right? There was a court ruling basically said athletes are entitled to earn based on their name, image, and likeness. So they're not paid a salary by the team they play for, but they can sign endorsements. And this is something we've seen in really the last 3-4 years. And a lot of people have termed it kind of the Wild West because there's been a, you know, minimal amount of regulation in this space. But athletes have begun to cash in. And so you've seen a lot of athletes do, you know, sponsorships with local car dealerships or local businesses. Some of the bigger athletes have done national deals, right? We've seen Gatorade, Beats by Dre is one that's jumped into that space, where they have signed a roster of collegiate athletes and essentially doing a lot of what they would try to do with professional athletes, where you have a sponsored athlete who's going to endorse your product, appear in some of your marketing and your advertising. And we're starting to see that market really mature at the collegiate level now as athletes are able to take advantage of the ability to monetize their name, their image, and their likeness based on, you know, the popularity they've accrued through playing collegiate sports.
And it creates a fair playing field because, for as you said, for years and years, colleges and universities were able to make lots of money on their student athletes and the success of their programs. And I'm thinking, as you're talking, I'm thinking about some of the more famous athletes. I think Olivia Dunn is probably a very famous one. She's an LSU gymnast. I think Angel Reese is another one that comes to mind. But there are a lot of very lucrative athletes. I mean, they can make in the 6 or 7 figures here.
Absolutely. I think it's important to point out it's a very small minority that are at that level, right? Yeah. That there are thousands and thousands of collegiate athletes across a number of these smaller sports, niche sports. But yeah, for a top quarterback, for, you know, Olivia Dunn, you mentioned gymnastics, women's college basketball is exploding right now. Some of those athletes are making, you know, in the millions of dollars range. I think sort of the top end might be in that, you know, high single digit millions at the moment, which is a significant amount of money, right? When you think about a teenager playing sports and in a space where there was no possibility to make any money, at least, you know, no way to make any money in a sort of legal NCAA approved sense. Until just the last few years.
Yeah, they used to say, friends of the program. Do you remember the movie? I don't know. Blue Chips was the Nick Nolte movie. I think Shaq was in it, but that, you know, the friends of the program. That was the way that used to be done. How you know, some athletes generating a lot of money, but they're really, how are they using this money? I'm assuming they're, you know, they could be going out to dinner and the bar and having friends with friends, but they're also investing this money as well.
Yeah, it's a subject I wrote about recently and something that I'm fascinated by because I think, you know, by and large, it's for these athletes, you know, you make a few $1,000s, it's maybe you're, you know, helping pay for your collegiate expenses, helping your family. But for the people who are making the millions of dollars, we're starting to see already this advisory structure and this investment structure mature around them a little bit. And this is, you know, probably won't be a surprise to any of your viewers that, you know, whenever you have individuals who are high net worths or high income, that there are going to be a lot of people out there looking for different ways to get involved with them, right? That, you know, if maybe it's a startup that's looking to raise capital, maybe it's an investment fund that's looking to bring on limited partners and investors. And we've started to see some of these collegiate athletes get involved in that space where they're looking to deploy their capital and begin to invest it, not just in stocks and bonds and sort of your traditional wealth management approach, but in these alternative asset classes where they're looking at, you know, teams and leagues and startups, kind of the venture capital space, which has been fascinating because that's something that I think, you know, over, and you know, we talked about it before, you know, decades and decades and decades, you know, we've seen on the pro side, it's taken forever for that to really mature and get to the point where it is now. And we're seeing in just 3-4 short years, collegiate athletes are already exploring that space.
Yeah. Chris, I need to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to pick up the conversation, talk more about nils and nil investments. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Chris, thanks so much for staying with us. Really appreciate you hanging around for this second segment.
Yeah, of course. No, enjoying chatting about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely fascinating. And I'm really happy for a lot of these athletes who can now monetize themselves. And now they're investing it in new and interesting ways. Let me take a step back. And an area that we focused on in the network, we're talking about this offline, is financial literacy. How financially literate are student athletes to be sophisticated enough to know what's a good deal, what's not a bad deal? Or do they hire third parties to help them?
It's a great question. I think we can even take a further step back, just say athletes in general, right? Because we've heard all the horror stories over the years of professional athletes, right? They make an investment in a restaurant chain and a car dealership. It goes belly up and they lose their money. And, you know, they made millions of dollars in their career and now they're broke. And so I think that we've seen the wealth management and financial advisory side of the sports business has really evolved, where athletes now have wealth managers or financial advisors who are overseeing a lot of what they do. And that has largely been on sort of your basic, you know, how do you approach, you know, thinking about cash flow? How do you approach saving for your future when you're thinking that an athletic career might be over when you're in your 30s or 40s, right? You're not going to be retiring at the same age as someone in a more professional or white collar career might be. And so that has begun to change. And I think athletes have become more savvy and more thoughtful about how they approach the question of finances. And I think for collegiate athletes in particular, it's a great question and a significant challenge because these are still kids, right? I mean, in many cases, 18, 19, 20 years old, you wouldn't expect them to have a thorough understanding of how, you know, venture capital fundraising works, let alone how stocks or bonds or CDs might operate. And so we're seeing a lot of wealth managers, you know, for the story that I wrote about on the subject, I talked to a number of wealth managers who work with these athletes, and they say, you know, really education is fundamentally the business that they're in. Their job is to educate these student athletes and their families, right? Get them up to speed on thinking through how, you know, how you think through cash flow, how you think through future cash flows, understanding that this may not be income that you're going to have for very long. Right? This could be a very short-term thing and that you need to use this money in a smart way to set yourself up for the future as best that you can. I apologize. Long-winded way of answering your question is that I think that it's a very much an educational process for a lot of these athletes and the student athletes in particular, but that they are getting more and more savvy about financial planning and wealth management. And part of that is, I think they look to the pro game, right? They see the athletes who have you know, making tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and the way that they're approaching investing, and they want to be like the athletes that they've idolized and they've modeled themselves on athletically off the court or off the field now. So I do think there is, you know, an increasing sophistication, but still a lot of education happening in that space.
Yeah. And it's, you know, for the layperson, I mean, we all need, I've been in the retirement industry for 30 years and I don't know it all. And I need to constantly refresh myself, especially if I haven't done a particular thing in a long period of time, buying a home, buying a car. There are things I forgot forgotten a lot of things. You know, I want to ask you, you know, in terms of where these people invest, where these individuals are investing, when you're writing the story, is there a particular theme? For example, biotech, is it sports related? Is there any rhyme or reason into what types of investment opportunities they're seeking?
I think it generally aligns with their interests is sort of the overarching umbrella answer to that. And within that, I would say it's fundamentally the ones that I've seen have been sports related. You know, the few that I wrote about, Caleb Williams, you know, incoming NFL draftee, likely number one draft pick in the upcoming NFL draft, was the quarterback at University of Southern California. He invested with Monarch, which is a women's sports investing fund. So he's now a limited partner in a fund that's going to be investing. You know, they acquired the National Women's Soccer League expansion team in Boston that's coming up. They're looking to do other women's sports deals. You know, another one is, you know, linebacker at University of Alabama who invested in the Sail GP US team. So a sailing team, you know, not something that you would typically think about football players being involved in, but obviously still within the world of sports. And so I think it's, you know, finding opportunities in the sports world that appeal to them, you know, is the main thrust, at least so far. And then, you know, another one I wrote about was Livy Dunn and another female collegiate athlete. Are part of an investment group that does more in the kind of the consumer product goods space, but it's, you know, by pooling athlete capital. And so, and I think another thing to think about too, is that for a lot of these athletes, it's not just, hey, I'm going to put my money into this company and hope for the best. They see an opportunity to invest in a company and then help that money grow by being involved with whatever that asset is. So if it's a Sail GP team, you know, going to races or tweeting about Sail GP to get more people interested in the team and growing the popularity. If it's a consumer product good, maybe it's your, you know, you're not getting paid a endorsement fee, but you might still be out there endorsing the product and helping the company grow because you have skin in the game now. So I think it's things that they're interested in and want to be involved in is sort of the general theme.
Chris, are there any lessons for us as lay people or me? I don't know if were an athlete in college. I certainly had played sports, but not at the collegiate level. Are there lessons for us as lay people watching this kind of evolve? I mean, I'm not going to go out and I probably won't get a nil deal for my likeness. I look like, you know, anyway, but are there some lessons for us as regular people on the street?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think anyone's running to my door for my, you know, recreational softball skills. I think, you know, in an overall sense, you know, look, a lot of these alternative assets are only available to very high net worth individuals, right? I mean, even in this space, we're talking about maybe a few dozen athletes who are going to even begin to think about putting money into a venture capital deal or investing in a team or a private equity fund. And that's not something that you need to worry about, I don't think, unless you have significant net wealth. And at that point, hopefully you do have a wealth manager or financial manager who's helping you think those decisions. I would say for the overall general public, I think a good lesson to take away from this is the importance of financial planning at a younger age, right? A lot of these wealth managers I talked to said, for these venture capital deals, I mean, they're highly risky. They're highly illiquid. You might lose that money, right? It's not like investing into a mutual fund where, you know, you might lose some of that investment. This is the threat is it goes to zero. And that is a big risk. And so they view it as that's a small chunk of money, but it's an educational process. You learn how that works. You learn whether you like it or not. You learn how to evaluate companies, do due diligence, things like that. And the wealth managers I talked to said that is an incredible experience for people this young, right? And especially for people who are going to go into their pro careers and begin to making more money. And I think that was, I was a little bit skeptical, to be honest, when I started thinking about, you know, collegiate athletes getting into alternative asset investing. And that was kind of a big takeaway for me, was how important the educational side of this is. So if there is a main lesson here, I think maybe that's it, that, you know, financial planning, financial management at a younger age, it's sort of, you know, it's never too soon to start thinking about that sort of thing. And, you know, kind of a critical importance, obviously, for athletes who are now making money and millions of dollars at that age. But I think the rest of us can take lessons from that as well.
Yep. Look, I'm waiting like you. I'm waiting for my nil deal. Anyone wants to sign me up? Let's talk about it. Chris, we're going to have to leave it there. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us. And we look forward to having you back on the program again.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. Thank you so much for having me.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more in all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content, then visit our website, Hey, we're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and, of course, another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.